once his darshan. Because when the devotee is in difficulty, Krishna comes. And by his darshan, bhavato darshanam yat syat apunar bhavam darshanam. That's the verse. Vipavat santu ta shashvat tatra tatra jagat guru bhavato darshanam yat syat apunar bhava darshanam. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. It's not that she wants liberation. She's, along with her sons, that she's an eternal associate of the Lord. She wants his darshan. She wants the intimacy of Krishna's personal presence. And now Krishna's leaving. We discussed this morning. Better to have the difficulties. Because with difficulties, Krishna will come. Just like in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, in the part one, when Narada goes to visit the Pandavas. The Pandavas are having a Pandava conference. And they're considering how to get Krishna to come. And their thought is, maybe we should plan a big sacrifice. Because that worked last time Krishna came, when there's a big sacrifice. But maybe Krishna will send somebody else instead of coming himself. So maybe we should have a big calamity. Yeah, let's have a big calamity because Krishna will come. Krishna always comes when there's a big calamity. Let's have a big calamity. Let's plan a big calamity. They don't mind the calamity because they want Krishna's association. There's a very wonderful pastime that takes place in Navadvip prior to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance. It's in relation to Bhima, by the way. We've been speaking about Bhima quite a bit. So, at the time of the... No, I'm just watching to see if you're taking notes here. Okay. At the time of the Rajasuya Yajna, the plan was that Yudhishthira would stay in the capital and the four brothers would go in the four different directions with their challenge horses and ask for the submission of all kings. The challenge horse was sent, which was the indication either you submit to Yudhishthira's reign, which meant that you would then give some tribute to Yudhishthira, or you don't submit to Yudhishthira's reign and you fight. And if you lose, we'll take your life and we'll take all of your wealth. So you can just give some wealth and accept Yudhishthira's reign. They were all happy to do that. And Bhima was heading in the easterly direction and nobody wanted to fight with Bhima. And everyone wanted to surrender to Yudhishthira's rule as the emperor. Except when he got into the area of Navadvip, there was one king who was a great devotee of Krishna, whose name was Samudra Sen. And Samudra Sen was thinking, I never get to see Krishna. I'm always very busy over here. Just like in the Krishna book, King Bahulashva, he wanted to see Krishna. So Krishna came to him. But Krishna was not coming to Navadvip. So he thought, if I fight with Bhima and put Bhima into difficulty, and Bhima prays to Krishna, I didn't even have to pray to Krishna. Krishna will come, and I'll get to see Krishna. So he accepted the challenge. I'll fight you. Bhima was thinking, great, I haven't had a good fight in a long time. And so the two armies were fighting, but Samudra saint was fighting with such devotion. I want to see Krishna. That for the first time, Bhima was being defeated. And Bhima was thinking, what's going on? I'm never defeated. And like Krishna showed himself, so Draupadi could see, Krishna showed himself so that no one on the battlefield except Samudra Sen could see. And when he saw the wonderful form of Krishna, the detail is described in Bhaktivedanta Mahatmya, he was stunned. He dropped his bows and arrows and his fighting equipment and was stunned in ecstasy seeing the form of Krishna, his beloved master. And then suddenly that form of Krishna turned into the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then the form of the Lord disappeared. So then he approached Bhima and said, very well, I surrender to you now. My desire is fulfilled. No one saw except Samudra. So Bhima was very happy. He didn't know what happened, but he wants to surrender. That's great. With the understanding, so this pastime is narrated with the understanding that when Krishna's dear devotees are in difficulty, Krishna will come. And so Kunti is praying on that basis. Vipada santu ta shashvat. This vipada is the key word in this section. It showed up in the first verse, and here it is again in this verse. Let these calamities come again and again. Because when those calamities come, we will see you again and again. And by seeing you, we'll no longer see birth and death. Our hearts, our lives will be made perfect, and we'll be with you always. So, in this world, calamities, please come. I welcome. Now I want to read a little section from the purport, just because the paragraph is hard to even explain it. Prabhupada's eloquence is so wonderful. You can even try to translate this when you get to it. It starts, well, this material is the third paragraph. By the Lord in Bhagavad Gita as a dangerous place full of calamities. What is that verse? Dukkalayam Ashashvatam. Less intelligent persons prepare plans to adjust to those calamities without knowing that the nature of this place is itself full of calamities. They have no information of the abode of the Lord, which is full of bliss and without trace of calamity. The duty of the sane person, therefore, is, O sane persons, here's your duty, to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances. Suffering all sorts of unavoidable misfortunes, one should make progress in spiritual realization because that is the mission of human life. The spirit soul is transcendental to all material calamities. Therefore, the so-called calamities are called false. A man may see a tiger swallowing him in a dream. And he may cry for this calamity. Actually, there is no tiger. And there is no suffering. It is simply a case of dreams. In the same way, all calamities of life are said to be dreams. If someone is lucky enough to get in contact with the Lord by devotional service, it is all gain. Contact with the Lord by any one of the 9 devotional services is always a forward step on the path going back to Godhead. So this is Prabhupada's ecstatic explanation of this wonderful, wonderful verse. Even in the translation, I can't refrain from commenting. Even the way that Prabhupada has translated this is poetic. Just the sound of it. Although it's not alliteration like Sanskrit, he's made it into alliteration in English prose. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again, so that we could see you again and again. For by seeing you, that means we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. Just a wonderful, wonderful prayer. Poetic. And very, very deep. Which leads into the next two verses, which are the final verses of this section, where Kunti is using this phrase, akinchana gochara, or akinchana vitaya. Akinchana is the operative word. And Prabhupada explains specifically what akinchana means in the second purport. Akinchana means one who has nothing material to give. It's because they have nothing material to own. You can't give what you don't have. One has no material attachments. One will certainly not give something material to another. In the fifth canto, the prayers of the residents of Jambudweep, there's this prayer where they glorify, the residents of Jambudweep glorify Krishna as they're glorifying so many different personalities who are worshipable, but no one is as worshipable as Krishna, the residents of Jambudweep say, because he never gives something material, even if people pray for it. And if he does give something material, he does it in such a way they will never ask for it again. Because, along with that something, he gives us two lotus feet. And when he gives us two lotus feet, all material desires are gone. Who can be as merciful as this is the topmost master of all? When Indra, in the sixth canto, Indra goes to Lord Vishnu, I've lost my kingdom again, please do something. You're my refuge, you're my everything. Lord Vishnu says, but Indra, I'm Lord Vishnu, I don't give material things to my devotees, I'm not such a fool. Ritrasura describes like that to Indra also. Our Lord is the kind of Lord, he'll never give material things to his devotees. Because they're just temporary and illusory, one becomes attached to them and one forgets him, and then the purpose of life is lost. So he doesn't do that. That's not our Lord. When he's showing kindness, he'll never give worldly things. Now, when the Supreme Lord does give worldly things to a devotee, it's an opportunity, the devotee should understand, it's an opportunity for service. And therefore, with a great degree of care and attention, those things that are given should be used in the mood of service only. Only in the mood of service. Because like that, one can become bewildered by that something that one receives. Bewildered thinking, aha, I've achieved something. Kartaham iti manyate jasi. Now I have this thing, whatever that thing is. It may be some money, it may be some knowledge, it may be some position, it may be honor, praise, something. I've got that something. I did it. It's mine. And pride enters into the heart. And Narada testimony describes when he's assessing the situation of Nalakuvar and Madigriva. They're in such this elevated position, the sons of the treasure of heaven. And Kuvera is a great devotee of Lord Shiva. They feel themselves specially privileged to be so dear to Lord Shiva because their son, my father, is so dear to Lord Shiva. And therefore, feeling themselves to be have achieved worldly and the blessings of Lord Shiva position in life, their hearts have become hard and cruel. And one who becomes hard and cruel, they can do any vicious thing and not even think about it. Just like they're standing naked before Narada. How abominable. And they don't even recognize that it's abominable. That's on top of the abominable. And therefore, the best thing for them is to have nothing for a long time. Punar Mushuka Bhava. So, devotee is in this akinchana position. They don't have and they don't give something material. Although they may utilize something material, they don't consider this is my possession. So, 26, another very famous verse, especially the first line Prabhupada quoted many, many times. Janma Aishvarya Shruti Sri Bir. Eda Mana Vadak Puman. Nair Vair Hatyamidatum Vai Tum Akinchana Gocharam. These four things are understood as the fruits of piety. If you find somewhere someone who has good birth, or Janma, or some kind of opulence, Aishvarya, or good education, Shruta, or beauty, Shri, Janma, Aishvarya, Shruta, Shri, Pir, Eda Mana Madak Puma, makes the mind bewildered, mad. On the other hand, one who is akinchana gocharam, materially exhausted, they don't have these things. Or they may have those things, but they're not finding happiness from those things. Their happiness is another kind of happiness. They're not finding happiness in those things because they're finding happiness within, just as Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita. The nature of the self-realized soul is tushyanti cha ramanti cha. They're very happy, tushy. They're satisfied. And they're deriving great happiness. Katiyantaschamam nityam. By engaging in talks about Krishna. They enjoy. There is a happiness. There is a contentment. There is a satisfaction. I've been asked on many occasions to present seminars in different subjects, and one that people like a lot is stress management. The first time I was asked to do that was at Carlson Business School in University of Minnesota. It's a new department. They have a huge building. It's very expensive, and they're all stressed out in that building. Business school. So I said, I agreed on one condition, that I can do it a little differently than most people do it. If I could express stress management from a spiritual perspective. So I explained, they agreed. It was 2 days, each session was 2.5 hours. 2.5, 2.5, 2.5, 2.5. There was a lot of time to go over stress management. I guess they're really stressed. So I said, I'm going to do this differently. I'm going to start at the end and work backwards. Usually you start at the beginning and work towards your conclusion. I'm going to start at the conclusion, if that's okay. You're okay with that? So I said, the best form of stress management is to not have any. But in this world, that doesn't exist. There's always some stress. So, beyond this world, there's Vaikuntha. And you can be in Vaikuntha consciousness, even in this world, and have no stress. They don't have any stress to manage. That's the spiritual solution. You can be like Queen Kunti. I didn't give that example because these were a mixed audience, but Queen Kunti is asking more. Not when you have something and you lose it from the attachment, even having, even before you lose it, there's unhappiness. Not having it, there's unhappiness. Having it, there's unhappiness. And losing it, there's unhappiness. So better to be the Akinchana Gochara position. And these four things, wealth, beauty, education, at least in the terms of wealth and education, add up the number of hours of everybody in this room, how many hours have been spent for education leading to wealth. And to even have the capacity to do those two things means there's some piety in the background. And if one does those things in a pious way, there's also the perk that one is hoping for another good birth after this one. Elevation to the higher, some higher position of some kind. And the cosmetic industry is huge. How much money and time people spend on trying to make themselves slim and beautiful. Nicely attired and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Smelling good. Looking good. Queen Kunti is saying that one who has those things cannot feelingly utter the holy name. They cannot feelingly offer prayers like she's feelingly offering prayers. Now she and her sons and their wife Draupadi are certainly very pious, they're certainly very, very beautiful. They certainly have great wealth, and they certainly have high education. They have all those things. But they can feeling, so have or not have is not the issue. It's where you find shelter is the issue. Prabhupada writes, a helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be so sincere. The previous sentence is also very powerful. He describes first that the chanting of the holy name is so powerful that even Avas chanting, one can rid oneself of all the reactions of all sins from millions of lifetimes, and there's no exaggeration in that statement, but there's always a but, right? There is a quality to such utterances also. It depends on the quality of feeling. Oh. We have to mean it. You can't just mechanically do it. has to be with feeling. And one cannot call with feeling if there's some other shelter that I'm thinking, well, just in case Krishna doesn't come through, I've got this going on and that going on and that going on. I've got my other shelters. I got backup plan B, C, D, and E. I'll call the holy name, but I got my program. So as long as one's mind is going with some other shelter, the full delivering effect of the holy name, or any form of prayer, or anything that we may do in spiritual life, the cleansing effect, the bringing our consciousness fully to Krishna, is not going to take place. We could say it's more softly. It may not take place. More directly, it will not take place. One can chant the holy name of the Lord for millions of lifetimes. Bahu janma kariyari shravana kirtana. But if one is engaged in inattentive chanting or any other offense, the full effect of chanting isn't going to take place. So Prabhupada comments that sometimes it is seen that a spiritually advanced person becomes materially impoverished. This is no discouragement. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to visit the house of his very friend Kolavachar Sridhar, he would tease Sridhar, say, "Why are you worshipping Krishna? Don't you see the worshippers of Goddess Durga? They have so much opulence and comfortable life. Look at you. Your clothes are just tatters. There's more holes in your clothes than clothes. Look at this place where you live. This grass hut that has so many holes in the rainy season, everything's just flooded in here. And you hardly have anything to eat. What's the use of you worshiping Krishna? Why don't you worship Durga at least? Why are you doing this to yourself?" He was, "Why live this life of impoverishment?" And Sridhar said, I'm not impoverished. I have Krishna's maintaining me. I have what I need. I'm very satisfied. And I see those people have so many things. Are they satisfied? They're never satisfied, and they're always arguing and quarreling with each other to get more, fighting over the scraps of each other's. No, thank you. I'm very contented. So, it's not that to be a devotee means live in squalor. The idea is that to be a devotee, finding happiness and contentment, I'm okay with my worship of Krishna as long as I have this, that, and the other thing. Better to not have this, that, and the other thing. And in that, if one cannot, in that condition, feelingly call out to Krishna. That's what Kunti's message is here. This is certainly relevant for each devotee. Very, very personal message. Very practical and personal message. We often, you know, we like to do the parallel track program of develop our material thing and develop our Krishna conscious thing. And as long as they're co-progressing, everything's fine. Quite often Krishna does arrange that they co-progress. But it may not happen like that. And from time to time, some calamity does come for each one of us. And how do we address ourselves to that calamity? Or where does our attention go when that comes? It's a good time to pick up 8th chapter of 1st Canto and read Kunti's prayers when that situation comes. When lecturing on this verse, on occasion Prabhupada would speak about the poverty in India. Because at least the government of India thinks that religion is the problem. And people in other parts of the world think similarly. This country doesn't have the nice facilities that other parts of the world have, and so we should bring in Christianity so that we'll have nice prosperity in India too, like in the rest of the world. Prabhupada would refer to, from this verse, that it's actually, in certain ways, it's a benediction from Krishna. So many people that are living, at least in a pious life, in rural parts of India, all the degradation of Western civilization is not touching them, because they have their simple life and their devotion to the Lord. And that's rapidly changing through 5-star TV and other forms of technology. The simplicity of rural life is fading, and the culture of that simple Vedic life is being invasively disturbed by our modern so-called prosperity. Anyway, Namo Kinchina Vittaya Nirvita Guna Vritaye Atma Ramaya Shantaya Kaivalya Pataye Namaha. My obeisances are unto you, who are the property of the materially impoverished. You have nothing to do with the actions and reactions of the material modes of nature. You are self-satisfied, and therefore you are the most gentle and are the master of the monists. And a nice long purport Prabhupada has written here. This completes this section. It's glorification of Krishna and glorification of those who have taken full shelter of Krishna. This Atma Ramaya, this can refer to the devotee. Devotees can be Atma Rama, but here in this case it's referring to Krishna, who himself is Atma Rama and Shantaya and Kaivalya Pataye. You're the shelter of the monists. Because Krishna, the way that Prabhupada has translated this, you are self-satisfied, Atma Rama, and therefore you're peaceful, gentle, and the master of the monists. Let me just read a little bit from the purport again. The second paragraph. Advancement of material vision or material civilization is a great stumbling block for spiritual advancement. Prabhupada's writing is like poetry. He was empowered. Not only the message he presented was very deep, but the way that he wrote, so attractive. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur recognized that, and anyone who reads his books regularly, and you read other things, the other things are just like chewing sawdust. And reading Prabhupada's writings is just like sweet nectar. really so nice. To say something high in a very pleasing way. It's so nice. Empowered. Such material advancement entangles the living being in the bondage of a material body, followed by all sorts of material miseries. Such material advancement is called anartha, or things not wanted. Actually, this is so. In the present context of material advancement, one uses lipstick at the cost of 50 cents. That's a little outdated. I have no idea what it costs now, but I'm sure it's more than 50 cents. And there are so many unwanted things which are all products of the material conception of life. By diverting attention to so many unwanted things, human energy is spoiled without achievement of spiritual realization, the prime necessity of human life. The attempt to reach the moon, so it's things, and it's the advancements of science to reach the moon. Is another example of spoiling energy. Because even if the moon is reached, the problems of life will not be solved. The devotees of the Lord are called akinchanas because they have practically no material assets. Such material assets are all products of the three modes of material nature. They foil spiritual energy. And thus, the less we possess such products of material nature, the more we have a good chance for spiritual progress. So Vrindavan is such a place. With conditions of weather and so many things. It's not a materially comfortable place. It's not meant to be a materially comfortable place. It's meant to be a place where hearing and chanting about Krishna go on. And devotion to Krishna is inspired. It's one of the nice reasons for coming here, coming together, and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam in the Holy Dham together. Seeing the beautiful forms of Radha Shama Sundar and Krishna, Balaram and Gaur-Nitai. And hearing Kunti's very, very wonderful elevated prayers. Prabhupada speaks about great ancient times and recent times, like Bharat Maharaj. Here he refers to Raghunath Das Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and Rupa Goswami. They achieved such high position spiritually, but previously they had such a high position materially, and they just left it like nothing. Nothing. And whether leaving it or staying in it, as Ambarish Maharaj did, he considered his wealth surpassed that of the heavenly planets. And what did he think of it? No more valuable than a piece of stone. Walk outside the door, go on the parikrama path heading back to the temple, and you find a little stone on the ground. Ah, I found a stone. Who cares? That's how Ambarish Maharaj considered all of the wealth that he had insignificant. He used it, but he didn't derive material happiness from it. He saw it as what it was, an opportunity to serve Krishna. He used it. In Raghunath Das and Sanatan Goswami's case, they left it. Use it or leave it. Don't be attached to it. And as he's nice to say, it's easy to understand why it's the right position to achieve that. Something else. So part of achieving that is, like Kunti, just praying. We have an understanding. Prayer is very powerful. Pray to Krishna for his shelter. Pray to Krishna, as Kunti is expressing here. Please take away these material shelters. Please take away the material satisfaction, the material anticipation in my heart for enjoyment of these things. And then be ready for Lord Hari to start taking things away left and right. and don't protest when he does. And don't hold on to those things. And this is a woman. So many men here. Little male pride stirred up. And this is a woman. You're all men. Prabhupada would say like that to his American disciples. You're American, do something wonderful. You're men. Be more than a woman. This is a woman speaking these things. You're supposed to be intelligent, discerning, able to understand deep things. So coming to the platform of Krishna conscious detachment from worldly shelters, attachment, exclusive attachment to Krishna, it may be part of Krishna's plan that there is some distress. Welcome it. Welcome the detachment. And because it's impetus, this is now just a summary of this section. It's impetus for shelter. Exclusive shelter in Krishna. Hey Krishna, hey Govinda. Please give me your shelter. I have no other shelter. Just like the Avanti Brahmin. Everything was taken. And there was one thing left. What he had forgotten, which is his spiritual practices. So he just took shelter of his spiritual practices. It was good. So maybe severe, it may be mild. Whatever is the Lord's plan. If something is taken, so be it. Difficulty comes. See, at least see behind the difficulty with the shelter-giving opportunity that's there. And don't protest. Take shelter of Krishna. These prayers are very nice spiritual instructions how to respond to situations that are everywhere in material existence.